Thanks, Dr. Rodewald, for that very lovely introduction. I have worked with the National Immunization Program down here for many, many years, and they are just wonderful. It is really a wonderful group. And I have to say, Dr. Strickas, you get an A. Truly a fine presentation. And one of the things that makes it so fine is that he actually presented some of what I'm going to say, so I will be able to be that much briefer than I otherwise would have been. I'm not going to use slides. I'm just going to talk to you. The slides are, I guess, available to you because they were uploaded, but they are the Institute of Medicine slides that were prepared for the release of our report on the priorities for the National Vaccine Plan. And as Ray mentioned, the National Vaccine Program Office came to the IOM and asked us to take a look at the plan in its draft form, to give them comments on priorities, to hold a series of meetings with stakeholders around the country, and to otherwise provide insight across all of the priority areas addressed by the plan. The committee included 12 members. We held 5 stakeholder meetings all over the country. There were in all 18 recommendations on priorities, and you can see those recommendations, of course, in the IOM report on the website. And we also made 2 recommendations on sort of the larger process for the development of the plan and for the National Vaccine Program Office itself. And for that, I actually would like to start with those last recommendations. We were incredibly impressed with the NVPO. We think that the people who work in the NVPO are quite remarkable, and what they have been asked to do with the resources they've been given go so far above and beyond what anybody might expect that our first recommendation was to infuse the office with the kinds of resources, both human and financial, that that office needs to really lead on a national plan. One of the things we did, our starting point for the priorities project, was to go back and actually look at the statute. This is a 1986 statute. It's, of course, best known for its establishment of the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. That's why most people know this law. But in fact, the compensation program is part of a much bigger law that raised, as Dr. Strickas pointed out, to really national levels, not federal levels, but national levels, the concept of a national vaccine plan. The law names the Secretary of Health and Human Services as the director of the plan. The Secretary, of course, delegates her authority to the head of the National Vaccine Office. And whoever sits at the helm of this strategic planning exercise is supposed to be imbued with the authority to not only assemble the elements of a plan, but play a very influential role in directing the effectuation of the plan. So you could imagine that in the case of immunizations, lots of federal agencies, along with state health departments, along with private industry, all have things going on that are part of their daily lives in working on issues relating to immunizations and vaccine. Clearly, the role that the plan plays is not only to catalog those, but to get up and over those agency-specific activities and to reach those activities, as Dr. Strickas mentioned, that really are national in scope. Are vaccines safe? Do we have an accessible system? Do we have the right research and development going on to get the country where it needs to get? What is our global positioning in relation to global health and vaccine policy? These big, big questions that transcend any single agency and that often require agencies to work together. So just as the National Vaccine Plan in its draft form dealt with issues of global and safety and R&D and access. So did we. And in addition, we made the recommendation that the vaccine office itself really needed to be strengthened and empowered to essentially be able to strategically direct resources. You can see the importance of having this kind of office most clearly given what has happened to national vaccine policy as a result of national health reform. Obviously, the work of the NVPO, and we know that this is something they're deeply involved with now, is to scrutinize the national vaccine plan in its current draft form against the opportunities that have been presented as a result of national health reform, as well as the additional observations and comments made by the Institute of Medicine Committee report. I just want to draw attention to some. Dr. Strick has, of course, has mentioned changes in coverage under Medicare, Medicaid, not as strong as some of us would have advocated for, did advocate for. It's an incentive for Medicaid programs to cover adults. It's not an obligation that they do so, but an important incentive nonetheless. Major breakthrough really being the requirement of immunization coverage as part of the exchange products. And I would add that many of the new requirements ultimately will apply. We're all waiting to see what the Department of Labor, Treasury, and Health and Human Services tell us as they're implementing the law, but the requirements ultimately will apply to employer health plans. In other words, the requirements and the provisions that are part of health benefit products sold in exchanges ultimately are meant to wash over those plans that are bought by employers in other markets. Now, some of them may change as a direct result of the legislation. Some of these plans may change over time because as more and more of the insured population gets its insurance through exchanges and the smaller group market, and as patterns of employer coverage shift for larger employers, which people are projecting will happen slowly over time, it will become more and more the custom of the insurance industry to write products that include immunizations. That's essentially how the relationship between law and industry practice work. If you are, just to take an example, if you are Blue Cross, Blue Shield, you certainly can write a million versions of the same product, but what you'd really like to be able to do as a large company, it's like manufacturing cars or anything else, is write a product that covers a standard set of benefits at a pretty much standard price. And so right now, whereas the custom in group market may be to sort of spotty around the issue of immunization coverage, with the kind of push that you now get from Congress in so many different insurance markets, you can expect that over time, the market will begin to smooth out, this would be my prediction, in the direction of broader and more standardized coverage, with some variation on cost sharing, but by and large, it will become the custom of the country in another decade or so to assume that there is third-party coverage on a first-dollar basis for the immunization of a patient. And that is a pretty remarkable thing. We have never, ever worked as a nation under the assumption that the patient we see is going to come walking in the door with insurance coverage for immunization. It makes the pilot in those 14 states extremely important. I turned to Lance and whispered to him, I said, in some ways, and of course I'm an insurance lawyer by training, so in some ways I don't understand this project because all you have to do is go out and hire, there are what's called third-party administrators that suppliers can hire to come in, and they literally come in and set up a billing system for you and they bill. And of course he reminded me that the issue is not just simply the mechanics of the billing. The issue is that insurance departments really have not dealt with the constant, they have not, even though Medicare and Medicaid actually have and do all the time, but insurance companies have not dealt with the fact that, in fact, health departments can and should and do bill for covered services. So the changes are really profound, and this issue of looking down the road and imagining yourself as an insured benefit, I think, is really important. There will be large populations that don't have the value of the coverage. There will be 23 million uninsured people. And there may be many recommended vaccines over the years that have yet to make it into insurance contracts because of the lag time, given what ACIP recommends and what becomes insured. And there will be many issues around emergency and public health preparedness that trigger broader thinking about immunization. But nonetheless, health reform has to be understood not just in its immediate impact, but on the ripple effects that it will have on the market. A couple of other issues that I think are worth noting in health reform. One is that the reform bill, of course, has many titles. It's just a vast bill. The coverage sections run about 400 or 500 pages, but a lot of the bill is devoted to everything from workforce to quality improvement to public health investments. And so there are enormous opportunities in immunization policy around new funding for prevention services in communities. There are opportunities related to quality improvement. For example, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services is going to be pushing very hard in both the Medicare program and the Medicaid and CHIP programs to establish new ways of thinking about providing care for people with chronic conditions, because they are the big expense in the healthcare system, and they are also the people who in some ways benefit the most from really good care. And those experiments will come in the form of entities known as accountable care organizations and new payment methods known as bundled payments. And, you know, every year it's a new idea and a new moniker. The monikers don't really matter. The point is more clinical integration, more organization in healthcare. I think a prime issue for immunization policy is going to be to make sure that to be an accountable care organization, certainly to be a medical home, but to be an accountable care organization as well, and to engage in a payment bundling demonstration for certain populations, that immunization of patients is a sine qua non, that you simply cannot get certified to be in a demonstration or be in a program without having assessment of immunization status and immunization as a core feature. Similarly, of course, in the case of health information technology, this issue of electronic health records is crucial, and particularly the question of whether anybody should have a certified electronic health record that does not have an immunization registry function that can pull information and report it, and whether there should be a state health department left out there that is not routinely getting these reports, getting them on a daily basis, and doing real-time reporting on the extent to which populations down to the community level are immunized and who's not. This should be just simply a basic functioning feature of the American health system, and I think that you know, we might yearn for the ramp up time to be done, but in the next number of years, it's what we will be looking at. So why don't I stop there, and maybe there are a couple of minutes for questions.